Hi, everybody. I'm Susanna Mars, and welcome to Adventures in Artslandia. I am sitting across from Adam Arnold, who is a studio owner and designer. He was designing in Seattle until 2002, and now he is here in Portland. He attended the Pacific Northwest College of Art and the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising. He designs and manufactures ready-to-wear and made-to-measure garments for clientele. Welcome, Adam, and thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Susanna.
Yeah, it's really nice to meet you. I had so much fun, as I was telling you earlier, looking at your website. Your clothing is beautiful and the colors are vibrant, and I just enjoyed it. And I thought to myself, gosh, if I wanted to go into my own personal closet and just get rid of anything that when I put on, I don't think, how would I go about it? Do you consult women in that way?
I do some consulting, but on the whole, most of my clients will come to my studio because either they kind of drove past the window, or they heard about something from a friend, or they saw something that someone was wearing. And so they already have a certain amount of, they have an idea in mind of either what they'd like, or what they'd like to have made, or the process. They want to experience that process of working with a creative person to create something. So I've kind of noticed it's less in the beginning about I want to narrow down my wardrobe than I would really like to. I'm interested in this, and I kind of would like to add something to my wardrobe that is made by somebody in the Portland area. Mm-hmm. But it definitely does, as time goes by, when people, let's say someone orders a dress or has a blouse made or a jacket, something starts happening. There's a shift in their kind of consciousness about clothing that kind of makes them look at their closet in a new way. And maybe they start seeing how it could be more about pieces that genuinely make them feel special. Mm-hmm. And all of the things that don't make them feel special start falling out of their closet. So I don't actively do that, but it kind of, it's like a natural part of the process.
I guess when I looked at all the pieces on your website, I thought, gosh, I would want this guy to have some space in my closet, you know, but it's just so beautiful and so beautifully made.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So who's your clientele? I must run
this
the gamut.
That's a good question. It does run the gamut. And for a long time, I wished I had some cookie cutter answer for like who my client is and what this person is like. But there never was that. And actually, I mean, I've been doing this for 18 years now on my own. And I would say that there are certain things that are that all my clients have in common. One, they have like a philanthropist kind of bend to them, their personality. They like to support art. They like to view art, experience it. They also like to work with artists, and it's that sort of a spirit. Mm-hmm. And also, they're all people that are kind of outside of the box. They're people that would have sat at the weird table in high school, and they're totally cool about that. Like, and that's really like a clientele that is difficult to pinpoint. It's difficult to market to those people because they don't listen to mainstream marketing. They don't listen to authority. They're just like, they're very confident and they like to express themselves.
And they have probably pretty strong opinions about what they want.
Very strong opinions. And I mean, I'm one of those people. I sat at the weird table in high school and grade school and all of that and expressed myself through clothing. And so that actually is, and they're all in Portland too, which is like, really amazing. I mean, I'm from here originally, or from Vancouver, Washington, and so to actually find that I could actually make a living in my own hometown is like fantastic, because this wasn't, you know, a place where you would expect a designer to create custom-made clothing for a clientele in. You know, this isn't that kind of city, or wasn't that kind of city.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Vancouver, Washington. Mm-hmm. Before that, actually way out in the woods, like in between kind of near Kelso and Longview. Mm-hmm. And So it was very, very rural. And I kind of always longed for culture and longed for, you know, exposure to, you know, international kinds of things. But there really wasn't that available. And so I would kind of create it on my own. Mm-hmm. Like I would spend a lot of time at the library, a lot of time listening to, you know, Japanese music records that I would rent from the, check out of the library, would create costumes. My grandmother was very influential in that and very supportive in my interest in expressing myself through clothing and
sewing.
Did she
let you dress her up?
I don't know if it was ever any, I don't know if I ever actually dressed her. I definitely made clothing for her later on, but I mean, it was always dress up. Like growing up, it was just like dressing up and wearing like kimonos to school or, you know, being like a wizard, or I actually turned a wagon into a 19th century kind of like covered wagon and made an outfit for my sister and like pulled her to school, you know, in grade school.
Oh so, my gosh. So
as
like
you can tell, I was very popular in like grade school. You know what I mean? It's not very, it's not the kind of thing that everybody in the school is doing,
was
let alone like a boy in Vancouver, Washington. You know?
Yeah. What was that like? I mean, that you had a real strength in who you were way early.
Yes, I did. It was kind of, it was more about, I didn't feel like I had a choice. Kind of like, some people feel like they want to fit in and they will dress like other people and act like other people, act like the majority. Whenever I would try to do that, I would horribly fail. And everyone would find me out that I was kind of different than them anyway. So I just learned very early on to just completely do it.
So who were some of the inspirations when you were young? Any person in popular culture that you felt was marching to the beat of their own drummer and that you were kind of inspired by? Or
A few people. I would say my second grade teacher. I always think of her even to this day, of not as a person necessarily, but as just like almost like a, like I can just see the clothing that she would wear. And so a lot of the things that I make are inspired by this person to this day.
Have you seen her?
Never.
When you're, oh.
No, and I mean, I don't, not since the second grade.
Oh my
and
goodness.
We actually had kind of a strange relationship. I know that she was always kind of trying to keep me down. Like I was trying to practice handwriting when we were supposed to learn printing. And so I was always getting called out for, you know, sharing too much in talent, you know, the talent class or the show and tell.
Oh, that's so interesting.
But she wore the best, I don't know, like her style was so personal. And so I would say my second grade teacher. And then of course, my dad's side of the family, my grandmother and my aunt especially, were very creative people, very, not really anyone else in my family. I would say my grandfather was a cartographer. So it's more like that kind of attention to detail and surveying and engineering. And
now I'm seeing what's up with the whole wagon
business.
You know, there's some
right
inspiration
and but also
there.
Drama. Like there was a lot of just creating a new reality, which is what, you know, personal expression through clothing is. I mean, you're creating your own personal reality when you're getting dressed in the morning, you know, and you're letting other people in on something. You're letting them in on where you're at, or, I mean, we're all such visual people, whether or not we like to admit it. I mean, we're very visual people. We will take things at surface value and then go in. So it's kind of like, I'm always thinking of the importance of expression through clothing, and also just the great like responsibility it brings along with it as well. I mean, it can make you respect yourself. It can allow other people to respect you. You can be treated so many different ways by what it is you're wearing. So,
well, that actually reminds me of the dress that you made Misty Tampoles, the mm-hmm. editor at Artslandia,
yeah.
which is festooned with this beautiful heart. And yeah. I wondered how the conversation went that encouraged you or inspired you to make the dress as it is. It's just yeah. so beautiful, and it really created a I know when I was with her and she was wearing it. It's just so lovely.
Well, thank you. And that dress, actually, like a lot of the pieces in my collection, I design mostly I'll be inspired, or I'll have a theme, or I'll create a problem for myself, or I'll, you know, be working through something. And clothing and design and sewing and construction is kind of the natural outlet for all of these problems or challenges.
So when you say that, I mean, to people who are not fashion uh-huh. insiders, industry insiders, mm-hmm. how would you, can you give an example of a, quote, problem that you're solving?
Okay, a problem I'm solving, let's see. So a creative problem would be, I want to, in the case of this heart dress, mm-hmm. I want to, like, Valentine's Day is coming up. Right? Mm-hmm. I want to incorporate clothing that has hearts in it, but it's subtle. Obviously, Misty's dress is not subtle. Mm-hmm. But when I first designed this dress, which was maybe 7 years ago, 8 years ago, which, like a lot of my pieces, I do design more as a timeless kind of piece that can be reinvented, like, throughout the years mm-hmm. or time or, mm-hmm. you know, in different fabrics and all that. But the actual outline of the dress, there is a heart in there, but it's only created by seams. So in the original dress.
Oh, that's neat.
The original dress was all one color.
Uh-huh.
And it was red because, you know, hearts. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know if hearts are actually red. They're probably like gray or like blue or gray or greenish, I don't know, yellowy. So, but it has this seam of a heart in it that actually, in that seam, it creates the fitting that's necessary for a dress, like the shape, like of a bust or a waist, side seams, all of that is incorporated in that one seam.
So, okay, that is so neat.
So it's very, that's the challenge, is how are you going to cover a body in a fabric using only seams, and then maybe those seams are recognizable shapes like hearts. And so some of it is like dreaming it up and drawing and sketching, but then it just comes down to, like, you know, the actual physical process of draping this dress or creating a pattern that actually does form to the body using this heart. So it's a challenge.
Oh, it's incredible, because I didn't realize that, and it's such a beautiful dress, and it fits her like a dream.
Yeah, well, then that's the other component. So after all of that, then you make it so it fits a person. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to even further go into the process where you are measuring someone and maintaining the integrity of the design on a new person, and it fits them. So it's an incredibly, it can be really complicated. It's definitely challenging, but that's kind of what feeds me also. I mean, challenge and struggle and opposition are also like extremely important factors in my work as well. And they can be very inspiring, so.
So you spoke a little bit about your aunt, mm-hmm. who I know was a major person who
formative
person in your life. Can you talk a little bit about how, I know you started working with her when you were just a boy?
Yeah, I was probably about 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. She tells me that when I was two or three, she came to babysit, and she was asking me, you know, "Oh, Adam, what are you doing?" Because I was sitting there doing something with some popsicle sticks and like some yarn or something. And she said, I just kind of gave her this like insolent kind of look, like, "Oh God, like I'm weaving, duh." You know, just mm-hmm. come on. So she said she never forgot that. It made, like, original, just like, wow, this kid is, you know, doing something that is that she can relate to. I mean, she can she understands weaving, but it's like, what is a two or three year old, you know,
right,
talking about weaving? And and then I started sewing when I was three, and so my grandmother
by hand,
and then by machine by age seven, I would say. I had this one of those little black old miniature Singer featherweight kind of things at my grandmother's house. And so when I was nine, my aunt, who had a studio in, I guess it was in Olympia then.
Mm-hmm.
She worked for Nordstrom she had a company that would work for Nordstrom, Nordstrom Visual Merchandising. And she would create, her company would create aprons for personal shoppers, or sometimes, you know, they would have Christmas trees, and all the Christmas trees are going to have Native American ornaments on them, you know? And,
oh, wow.
And so she would, her company would, you know, she would find out who was going to sew them, where the leather was going to come from, because they were made of leather, where they were going to be silk screened, all that kind of stuff. But when I kind of came on board as a nine-year-old, she started taking on more projects like, it was always Christmas, because it was always things like, we have, you know, we have to dress gnomes, or we have to dress Santa's elves.
Oh my gosh, what a perfect job for you.
What would they be wearing? So I would, you know, I learned to just sit down and sketch elves and costumes for elves. I would have 2 hours, and you just sketch elf costumes, you know? And so I would do that. And then I would create a pattern for the samples of all of these things. And I would
help her pick
out the fabrics. Yeah. And like, so I became pretty, I guess, instrumental in this part of, in this aspect of her business. She tells me that she kind of took on these projects because of me, that like I showed an interest in this, and you know, it's not going to hurt her business any.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she obviously trusted me heavily, because she confided in me that she could not have done those things that I was doing.
But everyone thought it was she who was doing it.
It was under her company's name.
So
yes. All
your work was attributed to her.
Yes, it was.
Wow.
Until, you know, I mean, and we'd worked on projects. I would say every single summer we would be working on the following Christmas season, the following holiday season.
You had a bona fide job.
Pretty much.
Have you?
Whether or not I wanted that at that time. I mean, I'm a 10-year-old or
right.
an 11 or a 12-year-old. And like, I did miss out a lot on like summer vacation kinds of things. It wasn't every summer. Sometimes it was for 2 weeks, but mm-hmm. it was like 20-hour days in a studio.
Oh my gosh.
You know, I learned a lot about strong work ethic. Like,
and so were you able to talk to your aunt about, you know, I'm done, I'm tired, or was there not that kind of,
I don't think there was ever that
conversation.
And obviously I was tired, but when you're a kid,
mm-hmm.
you know, you don't really have a choice. And you also, I mean, I really loved what I was doing.
Right, but it was just a little bit overkill
It could be,
yeah.
And I mean, it wasn't, I think in the beginning, like up until maybe my mid to late teens,
because mm-hmm.
I worked with her until I was about 19 or 20.
Oh my gracious, like
and
10
so,
years.
Yeah, just about. And so, you know,
right,
probably
you
received
went...
my master's degree in design by the time I was 16, you know what I mean?
Right.
In terms of like the school of hard knocks. But
so when you arrived, you know, when you went to PNCA,
yeah.
or, you know,
and
the
she actually
Institute.
Helped me create a presentation for the PNCA portfolio application process and review. I ended up winning a scholarship for the first, the foundation year because of my portfolio and because of that presentation. So for every part of like, you know, it's, I mean, this is just how she worked,
mm-hmm.
like 20-hour days, hardly any sleep, just like get in there, work, do things on time, do things three times above the expected standard, if not five or six times.
She really gave you a lesson in what it's really like to be a professional.
That was like drilled in. But like, I'm realizing, I mean, I'm 45 now, and I'm realizing that a lot of that was just like very like, that isn't the way the real life is. And it's just now dawning on me.
Oh, you know? I get that. Isn't it so interesting? Because you had your head down and you were meant to be a designer and this is your path.
Right.
And then when you think back about certain adults who, you know, weren't really exemplifying an adult way of doing things.
Yes.
And incorporating, you know, open communication.
Yes.
It's you know, and you've been working really hard.
But I guess what I wanted to say in the beginning is like, for all of that aspect where it was, you know, almost Dickensian, the work conditions at times, like, you know, sewing, I remember just like gluing or sewing beads onto like, you know, 1,000 sugar plum ornaments.
Oh my gosh.
In like a, you know, 50 degree studio out in the middle of nowhere, like a 30 or 40 degree, like you could see your breath and you're sewing them for like 20 hours a day. Like for all of that kind of struggle, she was extremely supportive too.
Right.
I mean, so there was, I always felt this kind of like, you don't really have a voice, but I never took on like that voice either. I never said, you know, hey, this is like too much.
I'm done.
And like, I actually don't want to come up. I would rather work at my job at the fabric store at the mall than like come up and, you know, make St. Nicholas another costume, you know, like, and I mean, I would even lie and say like, I couldn't get time off of work. And so I have to work at the mall, and she would call the mall, call the store and tell them that this was much more important than my job at the mall. And they were going to give me the time off.
Oh my goodness.
So under like working with a very strong personality, but still supportive and obviously beneficial to what I do now.
How'd you guys part ways? I mean, did you finally say, I'm out of here?
There was I would say just before I went to design school. So I went to PNCA for their foundation program. During that period, I realized I really gravitated toward the sculpture department, obviously. I didn't think I was going to be a designer, believe it or not. I had no idea at that point that this is what I wanted to do, even though I had been doing it my whole life. I thought I wanted to be an illustrator or a printmaker or something like that. But I gravitated toward the sculpture department. At that time, they did not have anything to do with textiles or clothing. So I didn't continue on there. I just kind of took a couple years off, lived in my parents' basement, like studied astrology and like made clothing to go out dancing every night. You know what I mean? Like, cause I was 19 or 18, 19, 20, you know? And at that same time, I remember being asked to help with it was always called helping her with a project. And I just didn't want to. And it was at that point, I think when I was 19, I wrote a quite lengthy letter kind of saying I would, you know, I'd rather have an aunt than a boss. I don't even remember. I just remember saying that mostly. And I remember feeling like, you know, you're the only other person other than my grandmother in my entire family that I have like things in common with, like personal things. Like we're like the black sheeps of the family, you know? We're just different. And
you could probably use her support.
Yeah, in ways other than
for her.
Yeah, in ways other than working.
Right.
That wasn't coming through as much as the work and the boss kind of aspect. And so I was like, let's get back to that. Like, You know, let's get back to that before age 9 thing. That's what the letter was kind of all about.
And was she amenable to it?
I don't remember because I was so scared.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
I was so scared to write that. Oh. And I don't know where my parents were in this whole thing either. Like, because I'm certain that they understood how I felt. And so, and I don't know. Anyway.
Oh, that's fascinating.
It's really strange. But yeah, so I did that. And then I went to design school at Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising mm-hmm. in San Francisco. And that was... that was just kind of the beginning of me kind of giving birth to like, what is it? Like, what do I do? Mm-hmm. You know, how does, you know, I decided to be a designer because going out one night, someone was like, why don't you go to design school? I was like, are you kidding? I hate clothing. I hate fashion design, or I hate fashion.
Oh my gosh. That's so interesting.
Yeah. I don't care for fashion mm-hmm. itself. I'm more about being inspired and creating clothing and, mm-hmm. and all of the kind of expression that comes through that. And actually at the core of that is having an idea and making it in 3 dimensions. It's mm-hmm. like manifestation, you know, having an idea and then being able to hold it in your hand, no matter if it was clothing or mm-hmm. whatever. I just picked clothing because it kind of touched most of the points.
And then you're in these amazing conversations with other people about their desires and
yeah,
it sounds really wonderful.
So yeah, I mean, I didn't get back to her until probably, I would say maybe like 5 years after. It wasn't again, like on a working basis until I had, you know, started, I guess, working for myself and realized the struggle of having, you know, $50 to your name and having to come up with rent and you don't have a job. And, you know, she actually gave me a project to work on. So, yeah.
Oh, so it came.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's part of growing up, you know, saying goodbye to certain things and having, you know, your individuality. That's what an incredible story.
Yeah.
So I have to ask you, do you like Project Runway?
No, I don't. I don't. Well, I don't watch it. I watched... Like one weekend I spent at the coast, like trying to just get away mm-hmm. and like holing up in some apartment, like hotel or motel down there on the coast. And I watched the first 2 seasons of mm-hmm. Project Runway. And mm-hmm. they were a cross between exciting and like, wow, I feel like I'm still at work. You know, it's like, that's like every day kind of like for me, except, and those first couple seasons seem to be more related to the actual making of clothing and less
the drama
about the drama and like, oh, you know, go into this dumpster and like make something out of this. And you've got like a few hours and I don't know, like also I have absolutely zero knowledge or interest in popular culture at all. Like I've never really been into popular culture, maybe past popular culture. Mm-hmm. But as almost like my recollection of it. So, and I know that, you know, on the show, they bring someone in and they're like, oh, so-and-so is going, you're going to get to dress so-and-so. And I would be the person on Project Runway that would just be like, I don't know who this person is, you know, or why is everyone freaking out? So it's not, it just seemed like, it also seems like you would to be on it because they have definitely asked me to be on it like a number of times.
Oh, wow.
Or asked me to at least submit some sort of application or something. And one of the main reasons I haven't is that you kind of give up everything that you've been doing before and you forevermore in the eyes internationally of people internationally, you become the guy from Project Runway.
Right.
You kind of give it up.
Right.
And which I understand. Any kind of like stepping into a new space, mm-hmm. you are going to give some things up. But I really I'm really proud of what I have accomplished and I am proud of my work and I'm, you know, appreciative that I am able to do this in a place like Portland where you wouldn't expect people to be fashionable. I mean, the whole Pacific Northwest kind of has a, it's almost like a cultural shame around spending money on clothing or mm-hmm. spending money on looking good. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, in the Northwest, people will actually kind of make you feel bad for dressing up.
That's interesting.
And
well, yeah.
And but I find myself a designer in this city. And, but that's kind of why I feel I'm so perfect for this city. Because I understand that. I mm-hmm. understand that. And, but I think that there's education in there. I mean, it's so much more than just clothing. It is like supporting artists. It is being a part of a creative process and you don't get that when you just go to a store and buy something, you know, like
right.
you don't meet the person that's making it for you.
Oh,
you
it's so amazing.
Yeah.
I love that. It kind of reminds me, I always like thinking about Mr. Rogers and how he'd always say, wow, I wonder who made this.
Yeah, like, totally.
Wow. You know, I just love that thinking. And I've always wanted to look at the back of a garment I'm wearing
yeah.
and find where it is.
Yeah.
Vietnam, China.
Right.
Look, see what.
Yeah. And you can do that even like I do have open studio hours on like Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays where people can just come in because
nice.
It's always been by appointment because it's the only way that I could ever get something accomplished.
Right.
But I've just kind of set these days aside or like the afternoons of those days so that people could just come in, look around, try things on, you know, maybe
great.
Like ask questions or just kind of see the studio because I mean, it isn't something that you see in this city. It isn't actually something that you see in a lot of cities where the designer is actually making all of the clothing and all it, like it's all there in that space. There aren't very many people in the world, I would say, that are doing that. So
that's amazing.
Or as crazy to do that, you know?
So you can look at adam-arnold.com and find out where the studio is.
Yes.
Meet Adam. Look at the clothing.
Yes.
And have a conversation with him.
Definitely.
Thank you so much for joining
me
today. It's just
fascinating.
Thank you,
Susanna.